I'm your brother Fire Mary Diesel Ogaya, and welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast. When I started this show in 2011, my goal was to inform. Obviously, the show has evolved, a lot of new topics, a lot of new thoughts, taking on metaphysics, some spirituality, hitting you with all types of things that you may have never heard of, and some that you have. It's always lively. But now I'm coming to you to ask you to help me prolong this podcast. For years, I have been producing this podcast for free on your behalf. I am now coming to you to ask you to support this work. $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever you can do, please do.
And now, the definition.
Today, we grieve. We look at that desk, and we know what we have lost. Dianne Feinstein was all of this and more. A friend, a hero for so many, a leader who changed the nation, a leader who changed the nature of the Senate, and who changed the fabric of the nation, America.
Lane and I got married shortly after the 92 election. And I remember that Dianne gave us a small depiction of the Capitol. I looked at it this morning because it's still on the wall, and remembered our dear colleague as a truly remarkable individual.
I owe a lot to Senator Feinstein. She kept the anti-gun violence movement alive for 15 years when no Democrats would talk about guns after 1994 until Sandy Hook. Dianne Feinstein was a very lonely, courageous voice. So we finally beat the NRA last year for the first time since she beat them in 1994. And the only reason that that happened is because Dianne Feinstein never gave up.
You think about women like me being able to stand here and serve in this institution. I mean, she blazed trails, and no matter what side of the aisle you're on, we're so grateful for her service.
At this time, just hours since her passing, rather than talk about her, let us just pray that she rests in peace. In that regard, Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent that all present in the chamber, as well as members and staff throughout the Capitol, to please rise for a moment of silence in remembrance of the late Honorable Senator Dianne Feinstein.
I got some breaking news. Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein has passed away at the age of 90. Now, I thought I would take today off. Then this happened. So let me quickly go over what led up to this point, what's been going on recently with Dianne Feinstein. I'll dabble a bit in her history. I'll show you a couple of clips as well. And then I'll end on what may happen now, because this seat has to be filled. So for a while now, it's been very clear that Dianne Feinstein should have already retired. She was hospitalized with shingles for several months, missing many key votes to confirm judges. There was no reason for her to hold on to her seat. And it increasingly appeared like it wasn't necessarily Feinstein who was trying to stay in, but the people around her who were enabling her, keeping her in. Because, you know, for the past year, she's been wheeled around in a wheelchair, looking like this. This is somebody who is not well, and not just because of their age or because she doesn't appear to be well, but because of moments like this. So this is during this is back in July. Feinstein told to just say aye, an awkward Senate committee moment. Check this out.
90-year-old Senator Dianne Feinstein appeared confused during a Senate Appropriations Committee meeting. That moment happened during a key markup meeting for a budget bill.
The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Feinstein.
You say aye.
Pardon me?
Aye.
Yeah.
To say
I would like to support a yes vote on this.
She's not supposed to be giving any speech here. This is an aye vote, and she doesn't understand that.
It provides $823 billion. That's an increase of $26 billion for the Department of Defense. And it funds priorities submitted.
Yeah, just say aye.
Okay, just
great,
aye.
Senator,
thank you.
Senator Durbin, Senator Reed.
Look, you're supposed to be a public servant. You're supposed to be, I mean, that's the job. I've said this before, if this is some corporate job, then who cares? It's, you know, that's the corporation. The executive's got to deal with that. When it's your job to serve the public and you literally can't do the job, you have to leave. This is not ageist or sexist, as we have seen claims of. Like, it's so, this article out just 2 weeks ago. Is it sexist to want Dianne Feinstein to retire? Now, this columnist does push back on that idea. But, like, you see quotes like this, and it's just incredible. Showing evident irritation, Pelosi told the reporter that there was a sexist double standard when it came to assessing the capability of aging politicians. Quote, Dianne comes along, and then they're making such a fuss? She said, it's a guy thing. But that's the way the world is. Like, this is not a sexist thing. People are calling for Mitch McConnell to retire. He's just had a couple of wild moments where he's completely frozen up 30 seconds each time and appearing not to know what the hell's going on. He should also retire. And there have been calls. This isn't just me saying this. There have been calls for that as well in the media, in the public. So this is not, there's no double standard here. We're looking at people who cannot do the job and saying, hey, you are supposed to be serving the public in your position. You're supposed to be doing the job. You can't do the job. You should leave. But instead, you get quotes like this. Quote, to me, it's ageist and sexist, said Republican Senator Joni Ernst. Quote, if it were a dude, would they be saying you need to step down or you need to recuse yourself from a committee? Quote, I don't know if it's age discrimination, sex discrimination, but we do know they wouldn't do it to a man, said Marsha Blackburn, Republican. I do find it funny that Republicans are coming to her defense here because they understand that it's beneficial to them if you have somebody in that spot who can't do the job. It benefits Republicans. It's been benefiting Republicans. Now, I was reading through this AP article and this stood out to me. Feinstein, the oldest sitting U.S. senator, was a passionate advocate for liberal priorities important to her state, including environmental protection. I don't know how they led with this one when this video exists. So I covered this back when it happened. This is back in early 2019. You have a climate activist here, young kids, confronting Dianne Feinstein, asking her to support some basic climate change legislation, and watch this interaction.
Scientists have said that we have 12 years to turn this around.
Well, it's not going to get turned around in 10 years. What we can do,
Senator, if this doesn't get turned around in 10 years, you're looking at the faces of the people who are going to be living with these consequences.
The government is supposed to be for the people and by the people and all for the
people. You know what's interesting about this group is I've been doing this for 30 years. I know what I'm doing. You come in here and you say it has to be my way or the highway. I don't respond to that. I've gotten elected. I just ran. I was elected by almost a million vote plurality. And I know what I'm doing. So, you know, maybe people should listen a little bit.
The condescension is absolutely incredible. This also goes to why, like, when you get to this point and you're this disconnected from the next generation, from people who are actually going to be living on this earth for the next 50 years, get the hell out. If you don't understand that fight, if you don't understand the need to fight for people who are going to be here, then you should not be in politics. And you could really apply that to a lot of people in politics, a lot of politicians, but it definitely applies here. Now, things worth noting from her career. She was the first female mayor of San Francisco and also the first female senator from California. So, you know, milestones there for sure. Things worth mentioning. And her most significant legislative accomplishment was early in her career was the assault weapons ban that was signed into law under Bill Clinton, even though it was, you know, expired 10 years later. But at the time, good piece of legislation. So there you go. What's going to happen now? Because Gavin Newsom has to appoint a replacement, and now the pressure is on for real because Feinstein's gone. He was going to wait till Feinstein was retired. Now he can't, obviously. So he has to replace Feinstein. He's, let me read this piece here. Newsom had committed at one point to appointing a black woman if he got a second Senate appointment, but he recently said if Feinstein did not complete her term, he would select a caretaker rather than Barbara Lee, the only black woman who was running for Feinstein's seat. And I, like, when there were these ideas out there that, oh, Gavin Newsom, it's important for Feinstein to retire, which I think it was true anyways, but people thought it's important for her to retire because Gavin Newsom will appoint, you know, a progressive like Barbara Lee. There was no chance of that ever happening. Gavin Newsom talks a good game, even has some good moments. I think I saw a headline recently. He passed a wage increase for fast food workers. Good. You know, there are some moments like that from Gavin Newsom, but he's not Bernie Sanders. Like he's very politically calculated. I think it's very clear he wants Adam Schiff to take that seat. Schiff is at best a moderate. He does not want, you know, Barbara Lee or Katie Porter. He's not going to put Barbara Lee in there.
Well, howdy there, Internet people. It's Beau again. So today we are going to talk about Senator Feinstein's vacancy and the situation that Governor Newsom now finds himself in. So if you have missed the news, Senator Feinstein is no longer with us. This means that Governor Newsom of California has to make an appointment. There are things that Newsom has said in the past about who he would or wouldn't appoint. He has said that he would appoint a black woman. He has said that he wouldn't appoint somebody currently running for the position. These are the two statements. These statements were made a while ago, and the issue that he is going to run into is that there are a lot of very well-known and pretty influential candidates that are now currently in the field to run for that position. And by his statement, well, he can't appoint them because he said that in the past. The other issue that he's going to run into is that when he said, I would appoint a black woman, I would be willing to bet that if you went to political insiders, people who really understood California politics, and said, hey, give me a black woman to fill a vacant Senate seat from California, 90% of them, the first name they would say would be Barbara Lee. She's running. There are a lot of very popular, very influential people within the Democratic Party that have already said they're going to go after that seat. If he appoints one of them, he risks alienating others. If he avoids it, he puts somebody into the incumbent position for the next election. Somebody that influential, powerful people within the Democratic Party are going to have to run against. He has put himself in a very difficult political position. And because of his apparent desire to launch to the national scene, it certainly seems like he's trying to build a resume to run for president. There's probably going to be a whole lot of thought put into how he handles this. There are, let's see, Porter, Schiff, the list goes on and on of people who are looking at this seat. And he can't risk alienating any of them. I have no idea what he is going to do, but this is probably his first real political test on the national scene. He has made a lot of political moves in California that have made the people of California pretty happy. His campaigning for a national position, it's gone pretty well. This is where the rubber meets the road, though. This is the first political test, because he has to find a way to make everybody happy. I have no idea how he is going to do it, but watching it should be pretty enlightening, because he does seem like somebody that's going to be destined for national prominence. And we're going to get to get a glimpse of how he might handle politically sensitive situations in the future. Anyway, it's just a thought. Y'all have a good day.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is likely engaging in elder abuse so she can play kingmaker in the Senate. And that's according to insiders who spoke to Politico. Now, the story revolves around Senator Dianne Feinstein, who we all know needs to retire immediately. She returned to the Senate after being absent for 2.5 months with a really bad shingles condition. When she was speaking to reporters recently and they asked about her time away, she seemed to have forgotten that she was away and denied it, said that she was in the Senate working the entire time. And of course, she has missed some pretty critical votes to confirm judges. Now, why hasn't the Democratic senator retired? She is not doing well. Well, Politico reports that there was a clue on the day that she returned to the Senate, because she was accompanied by a woman named Corinne Prada. And if you're wondering who she is, she's actually the oldest daughter of Nancy Pelosi's. Now, when Feinstein returned to the Senate last week, she was accompanied by Prada. Apparently, Prada has been basically living with Feinstein and playing a big role in the senator's life ever since her husband passed away. And not only did she escort Feinstein around Capitol Hill last week, she was again at her side yesterday, helping aides surround the senator in Capitol Hill as reporters were trying to ask her questions. Now, apparently, Pelosi is acutely aware of just how bad Feinstein's condition is. But when Congressman Ro Khanna, and Dean Phillips, by the way, called on her to retire because clearly she's experiencing significant mental decline, and now you can see physical decline as well, Nancy Pelosi responded with the statement, quote, "I've never seen them go after a man who was sick in the Senate." Yeah, but we don't have, as far as I know, there's no male in the Senate right now who is unable to perform their duties due to permanent mental decline, due to honestly old age, right? Well, it turns out that Nancy Pelosi has a stake in the game. So let's talk about that a little bit. Politico writes this: Pelosi has endorsed Representative Adam Schiff, her longtime protege and former handpicked House Intelligence Committee chair, to succeed Feinstein after her sixth and final term ends next year. Schiff is a household name in California and already has a $15 million campaign cash advantage over his nearest competitor. And so I want to go to a video featuring our very own Cenk Uygur, where he shares a bit of a prediction with us.
Why don't the Democrats replace her? It's easy. Governor Newsom would do it. He's a Democrat. It's the easiest thing in the world. Because they don't want a progressive in there, and they're worried that someone, anyone, by definition, will be more progressive than Dianne Feinstein, because both her, when she was of sound mind, and apparently her chief of staff, who's now the current senator, are both deeply conservative. So they're like, oh, we love that. So they just want to keep a corporate Democrat in there. And by the way, what did the Democrats ever do anyway? Nothing. So they're like, what do we need her for? We don't do anything. So the judicial nomination, some people are a little upset about. So let's pretend that we care about that, but not actually do anything, which is, of course, the route that they have settled on.
All right, so keep those words in your mind as I give you some more reporting from Politico. But if Feinstein were to bow to pressure and retire early, Adam Schiff's advantage would disappear. Governor Gavin Newsom has pledged to appoint a black woman to serve out her term. And one of Schiff's declared opponents, Representative Barbara Lee, would fit the bill. If Dianne Feinstein, they call her DiFi, resigns right now, there is an enormous probability that Barbara Lee gets appointed. Thus, it makes it harder for Schiff. One Pelosi family confidant said, adding that the relationship between Pelosi, her daughter, and the senator is being kept under wraps and very, very closely held. With that said, one more video from Cenk Uygur.
The holdup is that Gavin Newsom earlier promised, when he thought he didn't have to do it, that he would appoint a black woman. Well, who's the most logical black woman? Barbara Lee. Well, the problem is she's a progressive. And they would rather have all judicial appointments blocked than put a progressive into that seat. Mm-hmm. So Newsom right now is building a list of random African-American females in California in order to not give it to Barbara Lee.
I believe we have a hashtag for this, Cenk Uygur. It's called hashtag Cenk was right.
Well, I appreciate it, Anna. As I say every time when we get these right, guys, politics is not that hard to figure out. The establishment never wants a progressive. They'll do anything to avoid it. On other occasions, I also mentioned it's because the establishment favors Adam Schiff. And we talked about it in the context of that race, Adam Schiff versus Katie Porter and Adam Schiff versus Barbara Lee, specifically in regards to appointing Barbara Lee, the logical choice here. And by the way, I don't know who I would vote for between Barbara Lee and Katie Porter. But I do know Gavin Newsom definitely said he was gonna appoint a black woman. Barbara Lee is definitely the most qualified. There's no question about it. And I know that Gavin Newsom, every Democratic leader in California, and Nancy Pelosi all want Adam Schiff. Why do they all want Adam Schiff? Because he's the most corrupt. He has taken the most corporate donations, will do whatever corporations tell him to do. And Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi agree with that 100%. And they don't want this guy to lose. And they're like, damn it, we've got this black woman here. We don't want to be the senator, but we can't say that publicly because we love playing identity politics.
Right.
And ironically, Pelosi pulls the female card.
Yes.
On this very issue.
That's what they do. Guys. The Democratic Party weaponizes identity all the time for their political gain. That is it. That is it. You think Nancy Pelosi cares about women? Come on.
Not at all. Come on, guys. Come on. Look, that's some classic mainstream media stuff where they, a champion of women. No, you got to show it in the bills. I don't care what your theater is. I don't care how you rip up papers or what kind of cloth you wear and all this nonsense.
The
nonsense.
The theater, posturing.
Yeah, and so the minute that, by the way, we've now got the question. There's one answer I didn't know, which was, well, who's the actual senator from California? I've asked that on the show about half a dozen times now, because that one, I'm like, how the hell am I supposed to know? That one's not easy to predict. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the chief of staff. I don't know if it's the communications director. It turns out it's none of them. It's Nancy Pelosi.
I know. It's so sick. It's so sick. Like, I want you to really absorb what this means, okay? Dianne Feinstein is not in a good condition, both physically and mentally, okay? The fact that she didn't even know, remember, that she had been out for 2.5 months, they are They're exploiting her. They are using her. What Nancy Pelosi is doing is absolutely disgusting. It is disgusting. First of all, it's undemocratic. It's just gross. And so let's just go to some new reporting from the New York Times that actually shed some additional light on how poor Dianne Feinstein's health is right now. It's even worse than we knew. So they report, this came out today. The shingles spread to her face and neck, causing vision and balance impairments and facial paralysis known as Ramsay-Hunt syndrome. The virus also brought on a previously unreported case of encephalitis, a rare but potentially debilitating complication of shingles, according to two people familiar with the senator's diagnosis who spoke on the condition of anonymity to describe it. I'm not done, there's more. Okay, let's go to the next graphic. Characterized by swelling of the brain.
Come on.
Post-shingles encephalitis can leave patients with lasting memory or language problems, sleep disorders, bouts of confusion, mood disorders, which honestly explains a lot, headaches and difficulties walking. Older patients tend to have the most trouble recovering. And even before this latest illness, as we all know, Feinstein had already suffered substantial memory issues that had raised questions about her mental capacity. Guys, what Nancy Pelosi is doing right now is disgusting and sick.
So, of course, no one in mainstream media will tell you that because that's obviously true.
Because they're cowards and they like to provide cover for Pelosi.
Right, that would make the powerful uncomfortable.
Good, be uncomfortable.
And oh my God, a journalist, you can't make the powerful uncomfortable. What if they don't give you access? Why don't you go kiss their ass again? Okay, so listen, I am 100% against Republicans, but our job is to be honest, unlike apparently anyone else in media. And so in this case, I'm not having a conversation about Dianne Feinstein's mental health. It's over. She comes back from being out for all those months and she says, what, I wasn't out? It's over. I don't know or care if it's dementia or Alzheimer's or any of the above. She clearly has literally no idea what's going on. So this is beyond sick. It is incredibly deceptive. I don't find it to be like savvy politics that Nancy Pelosi installed her daughter as the illegitimate senator from California. No, I didn't vote for Nancy Pelosi's daughter. And guys, I'm also not having this conversation. Oh, the person next to Dianne Feinstein is always Nancy Pelosi's daughter. And Nancy Pelosi's daughter is the one who is telling you what Feinstein thinks.
No, it's even sicker than that.
No, she's the senator. Pelosi stole the seat.
No, guys, but there's also another element to the story in that New York Times piece that's genuinely concerning to me because they report that two different family members tried to visit the senator. And they were told that she didn't want to see anybody.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? No, no, no. If you're a family member of Dianne Feinstein, please go help your family member.
Yes.
And do not listen to sick politicians telling you you can't visit your family member because they'd like to take further advantage of her. Because Nancy Pelosi made a promise to Adam Schiff that don't worry, Adam, okay? All of us corrupt Democrats will stick together and we'll defeat that black woman, Barbara Lee, and the other woman, Katie Porter. Oh, by the way, I'm for women's rights. Get out of here, man.
Class war, class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Huh?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your brother, Brian Mary D. So, Gaia. And welcome to this Class War Battlefield Podcast emergency episode. Why an emergency? Because of life. I recorded this once on Friday. Today is October 2nd, 2023. I recorded this once on Friday after I heard that Diane Feinstein had passed away. Something that, honestly, I should have seen coming when a couple of weeks back I heard that Gavin Newsom had suddenly changed his commitment from "I'm going to appoint a black woman" to "I'm going to appoint a caretaker who's not going to run again." He has already made his choice. I'm not sure who the I don't have the name of the woman who's in front of me. There were some good things said, but just like with most Democratic Party politicians, there were also some bad things. She looks on the surface to be somewhat progressive, but she tends to be a politician, and so she does some things that are not so progressive. There's a book, it's a favorite of mine, I love listening to it, in fact. There's a guy who actually who recorded this book years ago. I think the first time I actually listened to this story was 2010. He recorded this book, put it up on LibriVox and his own website for people to download for free. The book is called They Call Me Carpenter. And I've mentioned it before. It takes the first four New Testament Gospels, or the primary four Testament Gospels, New Testament Gospels, and sets them in modern day, that was, I think, like the early 1920s for that book, America. Written by Upton Sinclair, They Call Me Carpenter, brings Jesus to life and sets him in the middle of an evolving situation and reveals the New Testament Gospels to be rather radical. There is a moment in the book where they're talking about Jesus is listening to the construct of conversation surrounding labor rights. And one of the strikers comments that when you, he goes, one of the guys is complaining about the collaborative nature of some of the individuals who are supposed to be representing them, the strikers, in negotiation, and how those individuals are collaborating with the enemy, the people who are actually trying to crush them. And to this, an individual says, well, what do you think? You know, what do you think will happen when you get the working man acting as a politician? One of the strands that has often been forgotten about and left behind from the radical traditions in the United States, those traditions that go back to the early 1900s, the late 1800s, is the need to redefine what politics means. In Rome, just like in Greece, politics was seen as trickery, as manipulation, as lies. It was a method utilized by the wealthy, the people who have the most in the society, to keep those who they were fleecing, those who they were taking the most from organizing themselves in a method, in a manner, which would threaten the quote system that these wealthy people had set up, which guaranteed them the incomes that they utilized the Lord over the people with. The irony is, in both instances, the majority of the time, the people didn't want to overturn the system. They just didn't want the wealthy to treat them so badly. Politics understood this and would utilize that human nature of codependence, not negative codependence, but real codependence. I want to take care of you because you take care of me. And I want you to take care of me because I take care of you. Which is a very healthy way to be. We come into the world thinking like that. They would utilize that natural feeling as a tool of manipulation. And they would literally look at these groups of people, who they were fleecing, who they were taking a lot from, and say, hey, we'll give you a little bit. Not much. May not even actually make your situation improve any, but we'll give you a little bit if you just quiet down a lot. We live in an era with this strong strain of politician or politics has run its course. The people are no longer satisfied with the wealthy saying to them, we'll give you a little bit even if it doesn't improve your lot. Even if it doesn't improve your life. All we need you to do is just shut up all the way. I want to use this as kind of a touchstone here, because here's the reality, y'all. I'm going to talk about Feinstein, and I'm going to talk about Pelosi. There's a lot that's happening. There's a lot that's happening when it comes to politics and the death of the senator and the decision to run by this other one. At the beginning of this episode were a multitude of audio clips that I pulled from various videos, including one from Cenk Uygur and Anna Kasparian on The Young Turks, where they talked about the revelation that Nancy Pelosi was influencing Dianne Feinstein to keep her in the Senate, even when it was clear that she was not in the, and she didn't have the mental agility and capacity to remain in the Senate. Now, to sidestep this, Pelosi insisted that this was because Feinstein was a woman, and that if it had been a man, nobody would have said anything. I call her bluff. I call her bluff. There's a story that I heard about some time ago, and I can't remember if it was Stuart Stevens who told the story, or if it was Lawrence Wilkerson who told the story. But I believe it was one of them two. Strom Thurmond was the longest-serving senator in and you know, I think up till the present day, I think he was the longest serving senator. It didn't come out until after he had passed on, though, what made him finally give up his seat. Because he was so old, Thurman was experiencing problems with his bowels. He wasn't able to hold them. Thus, as a measure of controlling those problems, he was put into an adult diaper. It became noticeable that he was wearing that adult diaper when he began to stink terribly. And soon, it became impossible for people to sit around him. And when nobody would sit with him, it became clear that he had to go. Now, I imagine, because this was a pretty quick story that was told, and I want to say it was Wilkerson who told it, but don't quote me on that. I imagine there had been people whispering to him that it might be time to give it up a long time before that, when those problems began to develop. But it just wasn't made public. It just wasn't made public. Today, in the present day, it was made public because of two reasons that is not cited by Nancy Pelosi. The first one is because you have a robust, non-conservative, non-mainstream media platforms, or multiple platforms, where people are talking about the state of the Democratic Party, not from a conservative perspective, but from a progressive perspective and a left of liberal perspective, which is very important that you note that. These people are discussing who needs to retire, who's been there too long, why do people need to retire, why do people need to get out of either the House of Representatives or the Senate, and who needs to replace them. They're not doing it most of the time because they hate the folks. They're doing it because they want to build a better majority that's going to be more responsive to the people who elect them, who are going to build a better society. That's one. The mainstream media only picked it up because progressives and people on the internet were talking about it. They couldn't ignore it. The other reason, though, is because there has been a conversation since 2018 surrounding the turnover rate within the House of Representatives and the Senate, and the fact that there needs to be new generations of leaders, particularly on the Democratic side, that are pushed forward. There has been those discussions. And when you have a person who is as old as Dianne Feinstein, now mind you, Bernie Sanders is presently, I think, 8 or 9 years younger than Feinstein. If Bernie Sanders at 90 is acting like Feinstein did when she, during the last few years of her life, let's say at 86 he starts showing deep signs of dementia. First and foremost, I can tell you this right now, Bernie Sanders would announce that he was retiring. He would. But let's say he doesn't. Here's what would surprise a person like Pelosi, who is very calculating and manipulative. People on the progressive left would have no problem saying, and I literally in the back of my head could hear Cenk Uygur 8 years from now, if Bernie Sanders clearly was suffering from some mental degradative disease, I literally can hear Cenk Uygur saying, you know, it pains me so much to have to say this, but Bernie Sanders is clearly, he's clearly, and you know how much I love Bernie Sanders, but he's clearly a shadow of himself. And somebody needs to convince him to step aside. He's done all that he can. Now it's time to let somebody else take the burden of the office from him. I can literally hear Cenk Uygur saying that. If Bernie Sanders was in the same position. If Bernie Sanders was in the same position. Now, there are two examples which you might be able to point to and say, but they weren't asked to leave. John McCain and Ted Kennedy. But in both instances, they were not suffering from mental decline. They were still able to, in many respects, do their jobs and run their offices. She was not. She wasn't. Now, let me flip over here to talking about replacing Feinstein. Because this is really where I had my most difficulty in talking about this in my first draft of this show, of this episode. And I had such a hard time because I saw what was happening. I saw what was happening. And what was it that I saw? Gavin Newsom, who is angling to be headman on block, to be national leader of the Democratic Party, either in 2028 or 2032. Assuming Joe Biden is reelected in 2024, Kamala Harris is going to run for president in 2028, but it's going to be an open primary. Gavin Newsom is trying to position himself to not only run for president in 2028. But there's a lot of folks, including people like Pelosi and the people who back her, who want him to be the new leader of the Democratic Party. They don't want Kamala. They don't want any. They want Gavin Newsom to be that guy. That stated, Gavin Newsom is already showcasing the necessary skills to put his people in place to run the government in a fashion which he approves of. Thus, when he made the announcement that he was going to appoint a African-American woman, a black woman, to that position when Feinstein retired, and then he shifted in and said, oh, I'm just going to appoint a caretaker. He was doing so, one, to try to score points with black people. Two, to try to match what Joe Biden did. Because Joe Biden said, I'm going to appoint a black woman to the Supreme Court. And Joe Biden got a bump from doing that. And then three, to put somebody who he trusted into that seat, who would do as he said they should do. But something happened on the way to actually making that selection. Black folks and progressives suddenly said, oh yeah, well we want Barbara Lee. We want Barbara Lee, and we want Barbara Lee now. He wasn't ready for that. The reason he wasn't ready for it wasn't because white progressives stood up and said, we want Barbara Lee. It was because black folks, who typically don't say much about nothing, especially when it comes to the middle class blacks that the Democrats have come to rely on for votes for the last 30 years, excuse me. Black folks in the middle class said, Barbara Lee or nobody. Now, I guarantee there were other groups within the black middle class who said, hey, you can put whoever you want in there. We're going to support her anyway. But there were other groups who surprised him who said, Barbara Lee or nobody. Try us. And that caused him to pause. Because, see, and I have an episode that I'm contemplating presently, and it's probably going to be titled something like Gen E, because you know I refuse to call them Gen Z, Gen E to baby boomers, mess around and find out, M-A-A-F-O. Typically, it's not M-A-A-F-O, it's F-A-A-F-O. I'll let you fill in the blank for what that F stands for. But this new generation has literally taken that upon their shoulders as a clarion call. Mess around and find out. We ain't playing with you no more. And Newsom, politician through and through, paused for a minute and said, wait, yeah, we're in a liberal state, but what do they mean, mess around and find out? What do they mean, mess around and find out? Well, he gonna find out because he messed around. He ain't put Barbara Lee up there. Now, supposedly, this is because this woman who he did appoint is not going to possibly, even though I just recently read something that said differently, but she's not supposedly going to run for the actual seat. But I just read something that said, nah, she can contend for the seat in 2024, I think, is when it's going to be up for election. Maybe. It doesn't matter. Let's talk about why Barbara Lee is getting basically ignored for this seat. Why Nancy Pelosi, because don't get this twisted, y'all. Nancy Pelosi is in on this at a very deep level. You see Nancy Pelosi and you see her in the Congress and you think her only power is in the Congress. That is not how this works. You become powerful in the Congress through your economic connections outside the Congress and through your social connections outside the Congress. Now, I implore all of you, go to Google Images and type in Nancy Pelosi JFK. And an interesting picture is going to come up. I actually found this picture by accident back in like 2019. I typed in pictures of Nancy Pelosi young because somebody had told me, they were like, you know, she's attractive now, but man, you should have seen her when she was younger, man. She was a knockout. And I was like, I can kind of see it. So yeah, let me. And one of the pictures that I saw was of her in, if I'm not mistaken, JFK. It was JFK or RFK, but it was one of the Kennedys. The woman is connected, in other words. She has deep social connections. She has deep economic connections. That is where her real base is. She can act as a kingmaker, and that's one of the reasons why she's running again, is because her chosen person, Hakeem Jeffries, can't do it without her. Understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's multiple reasons why she's running again. But Hakeem Jeffries is not going to make it if she's not there. Why? Because he's already shown that he is a serpent. He's not a progressive. He doesn't care about progressives. In fact, if he can weed out a ton of progressives like Nancy Pelosi started doing over the last two election cycles, he would do it. He would do it. I don't care that he's part of the Congressional Black Caucus. In the hood, they got a name for somebody like him. Back in the day, they used to call him a goat man. You can't trust his face. It's too plastic. It's too plastic. Now, I ain't got nothing against Jeffries. But he is not Nancy Pelosi. And she's running again because without her, he's getting overthrown. He will not be the next Speaker of the House. I don't even think the Congressional Black Caucus wants him. Which, the only person who can really keep the Congressional Black Caucus in line, Nancy Pelosi. Why? Because she got all the money strings. That's why she's running again. That, and also, she is about to help to lead a war against the future within the Democratic Party. What do I mean? Nobody in their right minds, cannot admit that a storm is coming. A storm is coming. This new generation in the next three election cycles, that's the next 6 years, is about to remake this House of Representatives and this Senate. They see it coming. The moneyed people see it coming. I don't care if they're conservative. I don't care if they're progressive. I don't care if they're liberal. They see it coming. They know that by 2032, this new Generation Z, with help from millennials, with help from late Generation Xers, they come into Washington and everything is getting redone. They see it. The combination of Generation E and millennials, politically, very progressive. At least the ones who are voting most of the time. There's a deep strain of conservatism within the white community, and there's a small strain of conservatism within the black and Latino communities and within the Asian communities. But black, Latino, Asian, the majority of them, progressive. You're talking about 85 to 90% of blacks are progressives or radicals. Now, mind you, you have to understand, because I've told y'all before, black people are typically conservative. Our conservatism is very progressive, though. That's what a lot of these white supremacist imperial conservatives don't understand. Even our conservatism is very progressive. I'll have to get into that someday. Trust me, I will get into that someday. In fact, I'll get into that someday. Anyway, you're talking 85 to 90% of black folks are progressive. Even in our conservatism, we are very progressive. The numbers that I saw when it comes to, came to Hispanics, you're talking 55 to 65% progressive. That's still a majority. Asians, same thing, a little bit higher, 60 to 70, progressive. And that's young people. That's young people. Meaning what? They get activated? You're not talking about a Congress that is, you know, split down the middle. You're talking about a Congress that the Democrats are going to control by 20 or more seats for the foreseeable future. You're talking about another desert period for the Republicans. They see this coming. So what do they have to do? How do they try to sidestep it? Man, I wish our cartoon president would come back. I know it won't, but I wish it would, because they had one of the best takes of this in 2020 that, if you haven't seen the series, go watch the series. But how do they get around it? They have to try to find some sellout tool millennials who they can put in these positions so that they can keep getting reelected and elected and elected and elected and elected, and they can try to let the air out of this left turn in Generation Z. How do I know this is their goal? Because they did this in the 1990s to sidestep the oncoming of Generation X's left turn, which wasn't even that progressive. It was just like, yo, make marijuana legal, stop messing with the gays, let the gays be gay, and take our peace dividend and actually build the society. They didn't even want all that. So they went to work to sidestep that. They found some tools within Generation X, put them forward, had them run for office. They kind of did a little bit of stuff and did nothing else for the rest of the time. This is what they're trying to do now. And Nancy Pelosi is a part of that. Her goal is to ensure that people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the folks who are like her and the squad are going to be increasing, that they know their place and that they bow down to the corporate masters of the Democratic Party. You can stop that by overwhelmingly voting these people in and making your voices heard every single time when those corporate forces come out for those people. This is actually very important, and really, honestly, I want to just spend a couple of seconds on it with you. The only way that they are able to steal your birthright, and understand, you're taking the government forward, is your birthright. The only way that that happens is if you don't participate. That's it. Now, let's talk about why they don't want Barbara Lee there. Let's talk about that quickly, and then I'm going to actually get to Feinstein, because I do have some comments on her death and the last few years of her life. The reason they don't want Barbara Lee there is because, and I don't know if any of you've noticed this, but they are afraid of a progressive getting in place and actually making the government work for the average people. What do I mean? Nancy Pelosi has been touted as a person who was very busy and got so much through the Congress when she was Speaker of the House, and even when she was Minority Leader. She got a lot done. But if you look at her record, most of what she got done was good for corporations, wasn't necessarily good for the average person. Even when there is the ability to do big things with a lot of wind at their backs, Nancy Pelosi was more interested in moderation than getting big things done. And here I'm talking about 2009 and 2010, when they had the votes to do whatever the hell they wanted to do. And don't give me this garbage, oh, well, they didn't always have 60 votes in the Senate. Let me remind you of something that most of you have forgotten about 2008's presidential election. Barack Obama was so damn popular, you literally had Republicans running for office touting the fact that they knew him, they wanted to work with him, and they literally were telling the voters, vote me in, I'm going to work with this guy and get big things done. The Democratic Party moderated what should have been a revolutionary moment, and people were literally giving them the permission on all sides to be revolutionary, and people like Nancy Pelosi moderated that. Incrementalism. Except, by the way, when it comes to things for the military-industrial complex and for big corporations, there was no incrementalism when Wall Street needed a bailout in 2008 and 2009. There was no incrementalism when there needed to be a stimulus package for Wall Street in 2020. Only when it's for you and I. They don't want Barbara Lee up there because Barbara Lee is going to, and by the way, this applies to the Senate too, because if she goes to the Senate, she is going to expose the corporatist nature of the Senate Democrats, and they don't want that. They don't want that. She's going to try to force them to actually get busy in changing the rules so things could get done, and they don't want that. They want somebody who's going to go along to get along. This is the same reason why they don't really want somebody as Speaker of the House who's a real progressive, because they're going to make Nancy Pelosi's record look like nothing. Because it is nothing. It is nothing. Explain to me things that she passed. I want you to give me 20 of them. Give me 20 bills that she passed in the last 50 years that, not 50 years, I'm sorry, 15 years that had significant impact on you and my life. There's a few that you can give her already. You can give her Obamacare. You can give her the tax credit, the child tax credit. You can give the negotiations, the ability for the government to negotiate prescription prices, which, for the life of me, you know your society is in trouble when the government isn't allowed to do the single most thing that people want the government to do, which is to negotiate prices with big corporations. By the way, there is no negotiation. The corporation says this is how much it costs to make this product. And the government says, fine, that's how much it costs. Awesome, we'll give you 30% over that for your profit. We're buying it. There's no negotiation. This is what the people need. This is what the people want. Boom. They don't want a real progressive as Speaker of the House because they would prove just how inept Nancy Pelosi's generation has been when it came to actually getting things done for the average person. Let's talk about Feinstein. I look at Dianne Feinstein's decline and ultimately her death in a very symbolic way. First and foremost, I believe her death should be seen as the death of a certain type of DLC, center of the road politic, which has been utilized by the Democratic Party to build itself and sustain itself over the past 4 or 5 decades. Well, 4 decades. I also view her death as symbolically relating to that rampant conservatism which clings desperately to the past so it doesn't have to confront the present and the future. recall, Feinstein, one of her last hurrahs before she went into her mental decline, was meeting with a group of young people who are asking her to get serious about climate change, sign on to the Green New Deal, and work to get something done for the benefit of their generation. She was quite hostile to that. She was beyond hostile to it, in fact. Sometime in the next few months, possibly even it might be the beginning of next year, I am going to release a group of episodes that I recorded between 2021 and 2023. And those episodes are about generation. And one of the things that I may have taken out of one of those episodes was this idea of the baby boomer generation, and some of Generation X fits into this too, never really wanting to accept the limitations of life, that life was mortal. This delusion of grandeur, that they'll live forever, prevented them from accurately preparing themselves to hand over power to the next generation, and thus to create a foundation from which that new generation can solve its problems. Feinstein's reaction to those young people was indicative of this delusion. It'll never happen, she said. It's not going to. Forget the fact that we only have so long to take care of this. It'll never happen. Her decline was symbolic to the decline of the Democratic politic, which said incrementalism for vital programs, but swiftness for corporate greed and profiteering. Am I saying that she deserved it? No. Am I mocking her for what she's gone through? No. Nobody wants to see anyone who they love go through what she went through, which is all a reason to keep her out of the public's eye. But she was in the public's eye. I can't change the history. She was there. So symbolism plays a role. When she was filmed giddily hugging one of her Republican counterparts, it dawned on me that this too was symbolic. It was symbolic of the nature of Democrats to act as if there was nothing wrong with the party that was quickly jettisoning this society towards authoritarian and fascistic rule. They were playing patty cake with them, believing this was still a childhood game of power, when in fact, this was a game that literally could cause history to turn on its head. The symbolism was right. Even the constriction of her body, the illness that constricted her body in ate her up in front of everyone's very eyes. Symbolic to the illness that has constricted the House of Representatives and the Senate and has eaten up the capacity of those bodies to act functionally well together. AOC, who I didn't even start off a big fan of, I've become a big fan of hers. AOC mentioned this. A decaying institution is what I believe she called it. The institution was decayed. And looking at Feinstein's final 2 years on this planet, she was a walking corpse. And that is not easy to say, but it's the truth. One of the audio clips that I played at the beginning of the episode, and for the first time ever, I actually know all of the audio clips that I played because I re-recorded this one, dealt with the role that Nancy Pelosi played in keeping Feinstein in her seat, even though she wasn't capable of actually managing from that seat. That too is symbolic. People holding together instead of repairing a decayed institution for their own benefit, their own selfish benefit, a plaything that they themselves can utilize towards their own ends, even though how they are holding it together and how they are manipulating it is injuring that very thing, that body politic, that body, that person's body, that person's health, the body politic's health, the institution's health. Do you see where I'm going with this? Do you see it? The symbolism is ripe, y'all. It is ripe. And yet, most of us ignored it. Even one of the last videos that I saw of her preparing to get into a car, it was stunning to me. The death mask that this woman wore, and they were trotting her out in public like this. And again, symbolism. Symbolism. The integrity of the institution. Trotted around. Brought around. Even though the institution is sick, is wary, is in need of help. See, the institution, unlike Feinstein, can be healed. The body politic can be repaired. But when unscrupulous people are able to get themselves appointed as caretaker of an institution that desperately needs saving, that needs healing, that saving grace, that healing never occurs, because unscrupulous people like things that they can mold, they can play with, they can control. And the sicker something is, the weaker that thing is, and thus the more capable they are able to control it. The problem is, and this is what is often forgotten, because history doesn't speak in terms of metaphysics, rarely. An institution is unlike a human body. A human body can cease to have life in it. When an institution dies, there is a vacuum that is created. The institution can continue to run, but that vacuum must be filled with something. And it is often filled with the breath of death. An institution can wear a death mask. The institution becomes as a zombie, possessed with bloodlust. It is destructive to all it touches, to all it reaches out for. It casts death wherever it glances. And it creates death wherever it steps. The problem with Nancy Pelosi, with Gavin Newsom, with the benefactors who are behind them, is these people really do not know the timetable, the time period, should I say, that they are living in. They believe that even if things go south, they're going to be fine because they live in California. And what's really going to happen in California? There's a lot of red areas in California. They don't realize what time it is. History is going to record one of two things about the next 4 years. It's either going to record that the Democratic Party clinging to a vision of their opponents that has ceased to be true for a few decades, stepped wildly into moderation at a time period when radical actions were called for to readjust the society, to save it from crumbling into authoritarianism, fascism, and sectarian violence. Or they're going to compare this Democratic Party to the Democratic Socialists of the 1920s and 30s. They misread history. They moderated too much. And the people who had promised them death and despair and tragedy and misery, who they had pushed aside and said, they're weak. They could never. They fulfilled their promise. And at the conclusion, when the evil was finally expelled out, those who had doubted the hardest did so from heaven. We are entering a turning point year, and what I suspect is going to be a turning point decade. Probably half a decade, 4 or 5 years. This is just the beginning. Quick note, because I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this, and I would be guilty of derelict of duty if I didn't mention this. I am not a fan of the Young Turks talking about identitarian politics in such a disparaging way. I'm not. Why? Because I think it's cowardice. The Democratic Party is not the promoter of what is often referred to as identity politics. That is the right wing. The Democratic Party has picked up the idea that identity is important, that true representation is important, which it is, because, well, there are groups that have been looked over, black, brown, red, yellow, and they have been looked over because they were not white. Now, it's odd to me, and I'll give credit to all those who have been making this noise for the last couple of years and talking about identity politics, that only when you're talking about black and brown and red and yellow people do we call it identity politics. Just like political correctness is only problematic when you're stopping white folks from calling something that they want to call, or I'm sorry, naming something that they want to name in a certain English or European tone, even though that thing had a name that was not English and not European. That's when political correctness becomes a problem. Identity politics is only identity politics when it is something that benefits black, brown, red, and yellow people. It is not identity politics when it benefits white people. The New Deal was identity politics. The Homestead Act was identity politics. All of that benefited white people. Most of the benefits of what would have been the Great Society, identity politics, mostly benefiting white people. Title IX is it, identity politics, mostly white women. No, actually, I think that's Title VI. Anyway, that portion of the civil rights legislation, which women has been able to make great strides. Most of the people who have made strides on that has been white women. That's identity politics. Or is it? You're falling into a trap, and you're doing it very well. You think that if you abandon, I quote, identity politics, that you're going to win over some of these white people who have crossed over to the dark side. Newsflash, Jenk, former Republican. A lot of those people, if it's not identity politics, it'll be something else. You used to be part of a party that had a big problem with race. A big problem with it. As I was explaining to an elder in our community, this idea of identity politics, this idea of CRT, this idea of wokeism, all of this is connected back to political correctness, which was the catchphrase and the catchword back in the late 80s and the early 90s through the 90s into the early 2000s. This is where all of this stems from. You're not going to attract people who don't like you by just getting rid of identity politics. If it's not identity politics, they'll come up with something else. You know how I know? Because they've been doing it. Hell, you've covered it on your own show, Jenk. You've covered it on your own show. They come up with stuff every couple years. If it's not identity politics, it'll be something else. And while I'm on this point of identity politics, explain to me how identity politics dovetails with Hunter Biden. Or the Biden crime family. These people ain't voting for you or anyone who you like. They ain't trying to get down with you unless they're sabotaging you. But what you're going to do, Jenk, and maybe you don't care because you're going to be fine anyway, right? And you may say that's unfair, but as a black man, I'm used to liberals getting kind of cold feet and doing stupid stuff and because they're going to be fine. They won't ever acknowledge that, but it's in the back of the head. What you're going to do is you're going to alienate black and brown and yellow and red people who you do need to actually show up in large numbers to defeat these fascists next November. Because the majority of white people are going to vote for Trump. A small sliver is not. It is going to be a coalition of those small group of white folks, those minorities of white folks with black, brown, red, and yellow people who are going to bust through that fascist door. But you're going to alienate them because you're trying to convince a group of people who don't like you, never will care about you. They'll care about you when you're bleeding on the ground and dying in front of them. You're trying to convince them that somehow you're okay. It ain't gonna happen, son. It ain't going to happen. Questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me. I'm your brother, Vyomir Adiso Gaya. Make sure, And I'm just starting to do this, so you'll notice it a lot more over the coming months. By the way, my goal was at least 52 episodes this year. I'm on pace to do that. My second goal was 60. I'm not sure if I'm going to hit 60, but I'm definitely on pace to get to 52. But make sure you check out below. So first and foremost, questions, comments, concerns, you know you can always reach out to me, radio4ALL.net, radio4ALL.net. Just type in Class War Battlefield Podcast. There's a search bar on the right, and then hit enter, and all of the episodes will come up. Click into one. There's a contact contributor box right there that you can hit. Send me anything, questions, comments, whatever, and I will receive them. I've had a few people do that, so it works. Additionally, when you're in there, especially for this episode, if you want to look down through the description, what you're going to see is a list of links, a list of links. And these links go to, one, the complete series of the History of Rome podcast, which Michael Duncan, that is his masterpiece. Should really applaud that man. That is just a great work of art. I mean, he did an amazing job with that. And then secondly, and I'm going to be doing this more and more, there's a list of progressive media sites that you can go to, including, it starts with a group of black leftist media sites that you can go to. So in case you're trying to expand your group, or you've been looking for, you know, sometimes at the end of the shows, I give a list of really good progressive media sources. You may have been looking to find those media sources. Well, now you don't got to look that far. Just check, and every episode that I release from here on out, I will have that list. I will be adding to it. So, you know, make sure you check that list often. Just copy the link and go right to it. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. Until the next one, peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.